Hello and welcome to I Can't Believe It's Not the Mouse, the podcast all about animation not made by the mouse. I'm your host, Dr. Random Macias, and today I'm talking about the Sony animated feature Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs. So for those of you who are completely unaware of what Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs is, and to be fair, the movie's over a decade old, so there's probably some of you who have already forgotten about it, whether it's because you never saw it or you're young. This is, quite honestly, one of those early features for Sony Animation that made me say, like, yeah, this studio is definitely something to look out for. This was back in 2009. It was the first full-length feature directed by Phil Lord and Chris Miller. If you don't know who they are, they're the guys responsible for mainly the Lego movie and the 21 Jump Street movies. I mean, I know that they've produced other stuff, but it'd be wrong to fully credit them for stuff like Spider-Verse, even though they are involved with it, don't get me wrong. But the way people act is like, okay, they are the guys who are fully in charge of that, even though, no, they, you know, they produce it, they write it, but they're not the directors. And, you know, it'd be good to give proper credit where credit is due. That being said, yeah. First feature from Phil Lord and Chris Miller, and it's just an incredible movie. Wasn't nominated for a lot of major awards from what I remember, but to be fair, 2009 was a very strong year for animation. What I mean, you had stuff like Fantastic Mr. Fox, Coraline, Secret of Kells, just a bunch of movies that were really good that year. So it's no surprise that something like this could get overlooked. I mean, if I'm not mistaken, even Miyazaki's own Ponyo was overlooked. And I mean, come on, that's Miyazaki we're talking about. A lot of animation people love Miyazaki. So if his stuff could get overlooked, it's no surprise that this would get overlooked. But yeah, 2009 was just a great year for animation. And this is one that I'm like, I feel years later revisiting is a lot better than it was even watching it back then. Like, granted, even back then, I thought it was a great movie. But just seeing all the little things that are in this makes me say, like, yeah, if you haven't seen it, you've missed out. And if you bought into the whole, like, oh, Sony was the worst animation studio out there back when they released the Emoji Movie, I'm like, look, I get it. The Emoji Movie was not a good movie. I don't really like it. But at the same time, the fact that you would completely ignore this really great movie that they made just to drive that narrative, I think it was definitely one of the biggest problems with the animation community. Because it's like, yeah, I've seen studios put out duds. You know, Disney's put out duds. Blue Sky's put out duds. DreamWorks, most companies have put out a dud or two. So it's really unfair to say that this was such a bad company when they had a masterpiece like this under their belt. And it's not like this was their only good movie up to that point. I would say probably their only great movie up to that point, but it's still like one great movie over, and you know, a bunch of other, you know, pretty good movies against one really bad movie does not make you the worst ever. And on top of that, just from an animation perspective, you can see a lot of love in this because it really does stand out compared to a lot of its competitors. Like, yeah, granted, by this point, it was not new to make animated movies where the characters moved more like 2D characters, but this is one that took it to a whole nother level, in my opinion, especially at that time, where it just looked very nice and fluid on a 3D perspective, because stuff like Chicken Little, the first Madagascar, weren't exactly great when they tried doing it, and there was a lot of it where it just didn't look right. And yeah, by this point, there was a few that already got it down pretty well, like Horton Hears a Who, and the second Madagascar, I think, did it pretty well, but still, this was on a whole nother level when it came to that kind of style of animation. For CG, just a really fun movie. And what works about it, and not that I want to dismiss animation, but you could see this even working, like if it was yeah, granted, it wouldn't have worked as well, but, you know, just the story beat, the, yeah, and the story, the characters and everything could even work in a live action setting. Now, granted, a lot of the physical action would be best in animation, which is why this is an animated feature. But I guess what I'm saying is that I could have easily seen this play like a straight parody of disaster features, which is what it is in live action, and it would have still been an effective movie. This being animated, of course, takes it to a whole other level, makes it an even better, funnier movie, but it is worth that acknowledgement that a lot of the writing and characters don't feel like cartoon caricatures of, you know, people. Like, yeah, granted, are kind of caricatures, but they feel more like just parodies of, like, the characters that you would see in those kinds of movies. And you could have easily seen this being, like, you know, like an airplane type of movie, and it would still work. It's not just something where it's like, okay, yeah, you know, even though it is suitable for kids to watch, it doesn't just feel like a movie that you would put on for your kids and the characters just act like nonsense characters just to please your kids for 90 minutes. There is actual growth to them. There is actual pathos to them. These characters feel like people. Funny, exaggerated people, but not to the extent of anything where it's like, okay, this is too much of a caricature. So for those of you who aren't familiar with this movie, the movie's plot is pretty basic. You got this whole town that is basically just a forgotten town, pretty much. Like, its main export to the rest of the world was tunas. People don't really like tuna, as the movie points out. It's super gross and nasty. The movie has a good sense of humor about everything. And the main character is this inventor character named Flint Lockwood, who essentially just wants a better life for everyone there. He wants to create things to improve people's lives, which I like the fact that the movie doesn't just limit, like, you know, like some inventions to just being like one-off gags. Like, it actually fully takes advantage of the stuff he makes throughout the movie to be part of the story, integral in some way or another. Like, you know, he at some point created, like, pigeons fused with rats. They make up, like, all the, you know, they're mostly just a joke by just showcasing, like, okay, every time there's a pigeon around, it's always the pigeon rat. You get this whole thing where he created shoes for himself, and it was just basically like spray on shoes. It kind of backfired on him because it turns out that it was so strong that he couldn't get them off of his feet. So, like, even 30 years later, he's still wearing those exact same shoes because it's pretty much fused to him at this point. You get, like, this walking TV, and there's, like, a whole running gag where you see that walking TV in the background just walking around at random points in the movie. Just stuff like that. It's really funny. It's really clever. And pretty much his latest invention is to finally get rid of just them eating tuna by creating this machine that basically takes in water and can create any food you want. Some shenanigans happen, and eventually it gets thrown up into the sky where it starts essentially raining food, which of course makes this place more of a tourist attraction. It wins Flint the appreciation of the mayor, the people, and even the letter girl that is sent there early on in the movie to cover an event. Yeah, of course, obviously things go wrong at some point, and it turns into this disaster weather movie. And the way it all works out is just very neat, very clean. It's just this very smart send up of these types of movies, while still creating its own identity. Like, it doesn't feel like the kind of thing where, like, you'd only understand it if you've ever seen those movies. Like, this is funny even if you've never seen a disaster movie. I've seen quite a few, just because there was a lot of those when I was growing up. The one I remember the most is Twister. But yeah, this is definitely one of those where if you don't get, like, if you don't know the frame of reference, you can still get the joke really well, which is why I really enjoy it. There's a lot of great character designs, one of the best ones being the father character, who's played by James Caan, He has one of like the funniest designs in animation, to the point that I've seen other studios do it, especially like Pixar, where basically his eyebrows kind of cover his eyes. And there are occasions where you see the eyes pop out, which makes it even funnier, but it just adds to that. Which, speaking of the father, that is a major part of the story, where you get basically the father and son not understanding each other. And that stuff is normally generic because, of course, we see it all the time. But what makes it work here is that you kind of, like, especially after rewatching it, you do get the sense that the father, always cared for the son. Like, he's not actually trying to trash the son. It's just that he really doesn't understand how to talk to the son, because his whole thing is that he is a tuna fisherman. So that's what that's his business. A lot of his metaphors, his advice and everything is based around just fishermen metaphors and stuff like that. So it pretty much becomes the whole thing where it's like the son doesn't really understand what he's saying. He assumes that he's just disrespecting him, and the father, of course, doesn't really know how to get through to him that he does care for him and is supportive. He just wants to add that perspective of like, hey, some of these things that you're doing doesn't really work, and there's kind of a question of whether or not that even is necessary in life. But of course he does care and does want him to be happy. It's just that he doesn't know how to talk to him. It's kind of like Chicken Little in that way, only like the good version of Chicken Little, because you also have the whole backstory of like the mom being the one that connected the two and was like the bridge between both of them understanding each other, but she passed away, so it's been harder for them to actually connect. It's just that the difference is that, unlike Chicken Little, you can always tell that the father cares about his son. And think about the son, the Flint Lockwood character. Bill Hader is just really great in this role. Again, this is a great example of like a celebrity voice role that is just perfect. Everyone who's in this is really charming. You got Andy Samberg giving one of his best performances as this like town celebrity, because pretty much like, since they had the whole thing with the tuna, there was this ad that they would use to promote the tuna that was exported there with a character called Baby Brandt. And basically we see this baby as an adult being this essentially celebrity around the town, because of course that's the biggest thing that's ever come out of it. And he's just this fat, washed up kind of idiot who just uses celebrity status to get all the attention. And he goes through his own little arc where, because everyone starts focusing on the main character for his invention, people are forgetting about him and whatnot. It's a really funny thing. Bruce Campbell's also in this, which is great. Yeah, he plays essentially the closest thing we have to a villain in this movie, which is one of the things I really appreciate, is that, like, you don't need to have a villain be like the main obstacle of a movie. We've learned that through a lot of movies, especially with Pixar and Disney, like ignoring villains over the years. But I think this is a nice balance of like, okay, Bruce Campbell's character, he's the mayor who essentially starts demanding more and more food to the point that it slowly causes this disaster. And he, of course, manipulates Flint into just going with it just so he can get more fame. It's a good example of how you can balance out having an antagonist without necessarily making the antagonist the main problem of the movie. Because that's a big problem with a lot of movies, especially animation, where they just sometimes kind of force a villain for no real reason. And it's not necessary. In this case, his whole point is just to instigate the bad stuff that eventually happens. But he's not exactly out to take over the world or anything like that. Once this part is done, he's pretty much out of the movie. So it works out. And still, it's just fun to always hear Bruce Campbell say stupid stuff. Then you get a lot of charm with Flint Lockwood's Weather Girl girlfriend, Sam Sparks, who is basically she's introduced to us as like this kind of naive, popular girl. But we slowly realize that she's also a nerd. It's just that she kind of left that lifestyle because she was bullied a lot as a kid. I don't know. It is a cute, charming character. She's played by Anna Faris, and again, just really cute character, fun, and it does add a nice layer of dimension to this movie. just because you get that idea, that example of like, hey, this is essentially Flint if Flint had given up his dreams while still kind of working on it just because of, you know, no one believing in him. So you see Flint make her grow as she makes Flint grow, and it's just a really cute romance. But again, the animation is where this movie really shines. It's just this really funny style that is very reminiscent of classic cartoons. You get like a lot of, you know, exaggerated emotions that is just hilarious. Like when characters are typing, oftentimes you'll just see them kind of like smacking the keyboard around, and it's funny because it's like, you know, how is that making out like the words and whatnot, but you don't really care because it's just a nice little thing. And just a lot of exaggerated emotions. It doesn't hide the fact that there's some great reactions. Like there's a whole sequence in this movie where, because basically there's a cop in the movie played by Mr. T. Great performance from him. And his whole thing is that he loves the son, and it, you know, of course, reflects, again, Flint with his father, which is what I really love about this movie, is that characters are given their own little arcs, and they all reflect each other very well. But you got Mr. T with his son, and Mr. T basically requests, you know, a special gift for his son's birthday, which is basically a snow day, but with ice cream. Really funny sequence. One of my favorite gags in the movie, which again is one of those things where if you rewatch it, you might pick it up if you didn't pick it up in the first time, because there's a lot of little jokes that happen throughout in the background. If you miss it, where there's a part where you see like a bunch of the kids are all eating like the snow ice cream, and it's like, okay, one is chocolate, one is vanilla, and one is strawberries, basically like the, what do they call it, the Napoleon ice cream or whatever, Neapolitan, whatever. And you see like a lot of kids are on chocolate, there are some kids on vanilla, but only one kid on strawberry, who just shouts out, "Strawberry's my favorite." And it's just hilarious because it's like, again, you don't really pay attention too much. You could easily miss it while looking at all the detail. But when you rewatch it, you notice like, hey, look, that's the only kid that's there. So he's the one that mentioned that. And it's just hilarious. And of course, it reflects the real world. I mean, everyone's favorite is always chocolate, it seems. But yeah, like you get a lot of good reaction shots to that. Like there's a whole bit where Flint learns what a snowball fight is through that. And as he's playing, he gets a little rough, and you see some of the people who get hit by his snowballs reacting in a way where it almost looked like they've been shot at. Granted, of course, they would bounce back up, but it's still just hilarious just seeing like that motion of like, you know, Flint almost killed him, it seems. But yeah, you get a lot of stuff like that throughout the movie. It's just, I mean, again, I'm repeating myself, but it is a very clever, fun movie. And yeah, like, you know, even towards the end, there's just a lot of cleverness to it. Like, you know, like during the final act, they're like, okay, we got to use this USB to plug into that machine to basically stop it from working. And they throw a bunch of wrenches in it, and it never gets tiring because it all feels earned, I guess, to make, you know, that last hurrah, you know, even more impactful. Like the USB gets knocked out, so of course they have to find another way around it. Flint calls his dad up so he can have his big moment to, you know, save the day, leading to a very comedic moment where the father doesn't know how to use a computer to send the email, the kill code from the USB into Flint's phone. And you get that triumphant moment of like, oh, he finally did it. Except it turns out that he emailed the wrong thing. If you haven't seen the movie, I'll let you see what exactly he emails. It's a complete failure. But then Flint realizing like, wait a second, he still has his spray can of the spray on shoes that he made as a kid, and knowing how indestructible those were, it ends up saving the day. And it's like, yeah, that's a well-earned payoff to that whole gag from all the way back in the beginning. And it's just like what I was saying earlier, it makes it work because it's stuff like, yeah, this is a character, this is a story that knows every little beat of its story and fully utilizes it to a point that it's just perfect writing. For me personally, like, you know, yeah, there are better movies that have been made, more emotional ones, but I can't deny that it works. So it just feels perfect. Like, I don't really have any major complaints over it, other than just I've seen other stuff that I enjoy a little more, but that doesn't mean anything. On its own terms, it's just this incredible comedy that's smart, always has something funny to say. Even if some of the jokes might not be as funny as some of the other ones, they're always landing. So I really have no complaints. Like, Flynn has a sidekick monkey voiced by Neil Patrick Harris. Every scene with it is funny, and especially when he gets his big moment with gummy bears, it's hilarious. Really funny stuff. I really don't know. Like, you know, and the way they set these things up is also perfect, just because some of it you don't even realize, like, it's going to be important later on. An early reveal where, like, the Weather Girl, Sam, has a peanut allergy, which Flint also mentions he has, even though he doesn't, just because he thinks it'll make him look more attractive to her. And that pays off in a big way in the third act, where, you know, one of the obstacles involves peanuts. Yeah, it's just a really funny movie. I don't want to give away a lot of the jokes. Like, there's stuff, like, with the whole disaster thing, they even poke fun at the fact that a lot of these disaster movies often focus in on scenes with landmarks getting destroyed, by having them acknowledge that, yeah, for some reason, the word weather disaster is hitting a pattern of just hitting the landmarks first. Stuff like a fortune cookie falls on the Great Wall of China, predicting corn is going to crush the people. Britain is hit by hot tea. Stuff like that. It's all just funny stuff. And which, again, I don't want to really spoil a lot of these jokes, because it's really funny. But it again, it, you know, just to tell you how clever this movie is. Like, early on in the movie, when the weather girl is explaining what's happening to the town with the food falling, you get this whole glimpse of around the world, where they have, like, okay, here's all the different language dubs that she has. And in Britain, it showcases that even Britain has dubbed her over with a British voice. Hilarious. And to be fair, I don't know if that was the intention, but this is actually kind of true, because I, you know, granted, it also works the other way around, but there's a lot of cases where, when it comes to animated features, they get British celebrities to voice over, like, certain roles. Like, I remember for that Wreck-It Ralph sequel, they were like, okay, let's get some British YouTuber to voice over this little character that Ralph interacts with throughout the movie. I don't know. Again, I don't know if that was the intention, but it kind of feels like it. If not, it feels like a funny jab at it. It's still funny regardless if it's not supposed to be a jab at that. Just clever stuff like that. There's a whole bit that involves the explanation of the horrible things that are going to happen, and, you know, people around the world are reacting to it. And there's a hilarious punchline in regards to a mention of, like, oh, China's going to be hit. I think it was China is going to be hit by this. And the people reacting to it are British. So no one really cares, except for, like, the one person who's actually from there. Yeah. Really funny movie. Really clever. I mean, do I really care that it wasn't nominated at a lot of places? No, because I get why there was a lot of strong competition. If I'm completely honest, I would honestly argue that it was better than some of the movies that got their recognition. But that doesn't really matter, and it's not really important to the overall conversation. I just know that over a decade later, you know, while it is still a well-known movie, it seems to be kind of forgotten, since a lot of people often credit, like, Spider-Verse as, like, the first great Sony movie, even though this existed beforehand. It even got a good sequel. Not as good as this one, but it was a good sequel. And it is just something where I'm like, guys, you know, like, not to sound like a hipster or anything like that, but I was on the Sony support train a lot longer, and you guys are missing out. This is just a fun, hilarious movie, and I cannot praise it enough for that. I'm probably forgetting to mention something. I don't know. If I ever have someone over who wants to talk about it, I'll gladly revisit this movie, because realistically, this is a movie worth revisiting as much as you want. It's hilarious. It's smart. It's well told. It's just a very perfect parody of weather movies. Thank you for listening, and I hope to see you again next time.
Strawberries, my favorite!
Thank you for coming on today. If you enjoyed this, please consider subscribing to my YouTube channel, where you'll see video versions of these podcasts. And if you just want to listen to them, there's always the option of just following the podcasts on their various sites, whether it's Spotify, Podbean, or Apple Podcasts. Whatever you choose, I hope you continue enjoying these. And if you want to support me even further than that, there's always the option of Patreon. With Patreon, even just a dollar will get your name on the video versions of this and on other videos that I may do outside of these podcasts. A few dollars more gets you some behind the scenes info, and as this continues to grow, you'll find that there's more perks to it. So I hope you consider supporting me through Patreon as well. And in any case, again, thank you for listening, and I hope you have a wonderful day.